irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, and I'm here to tell you that you can radically and permanently change your relationship to food without ever counting calories, carbs, or fat grams, without ever going on a diet. So how do you do that? By changing your relationship to yourself. It's not what you're eating that's the real problem, it's what's eating at you. If you'd like to join me today, the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. I would love to hear what's weighing on your mind. So last week, I talked about how being your own best friend is a crucial step to making peace with food. I shared about 8 out of 12 tips on how to be your own best friend. And today, I want to share the rest of them. Let you know all the tips on how to be your own best friend, because it's so important. So to recap from last week, here are some crucial ways to be your own best friend. Because by the way, when you're a friend to yourself, you won't use food to escape your own mean voice. When you're nice to yourself, you're going to feel pretty good. That's the idea. So number one, praise yourself rather than waiting for other people to do that. It's not boasting. It's not arrogant. It's being perceptive and honoring your truth. Realize you are fundamentally worthy. Laugh with yourself. Have fun. Don't always criticize yourself. You will feel better. Accept yourself. And that means accepting all of yourself, the parts you like and the parts you don't like so much. Think about how you accept your friends. Have you ever said to your friend, you know, I really like you and we're best friends and all, and, you know, I love hanging out, but I would like you so much better if you just lost like 10 more pounds, 50, 100 pounds. I'd like you so much better. I don't think you would ever say that. So don't say that to yourself. Spend time discovering more about your character and personality. In other words, be curious, not critical. One of my favorite pieces of advice, because when you're critical, you feel bad. You make yourself feel bad. When you're curious, you are more likely to find the answer to what's going on with you, what's eating at you. Number six, cultivate self-awareness. Focus on what you think of other people in situations rather than worrying about what they think of you. Be more self-aware about your thoughts, your ideas, what's in your mind. Number seven, seek out solitude. Loneliness is being alone without any kind of supportive, nurturing, good, friendly part of you, whereas solitude is the opposite. When you are lonely, it means you're just alone with like an emptiness. When you have solitude, it means that you are with a part of yourself that can be nurturing and that can sustain you. And that is so, so, so important, because we have to be able to be with ourselves. But if you're alone with your critical self, it's not going to go very, very well. And that's where lots of people turn to food to avoid their inner critic. And learn how to comfort yourself with words, you know, instead of food is also very important. So that brings me to number 9 out of 12. If you missed last week's show, by the way, you can always go back to listen to the podcast version of the show. You can find it on Apple Podcasts or anywhere you get your podcasts. Number 9, learn how to have fun alone. This is related to solitude, but it's different in that it's a little bit more active. So when most of us think about enjoying ourselves, we usually equate it with, or I shouldn't say usually, many of us equate it with human contact. We think about going to the movies with friends, playing sports, playing game night, going to a lecture, going to a class, going out to eat at a restaurant with friends. So many of us have learned to enjoy life only when we're in the company of other people and not solely in the company of ourselves. So try developing an enjoyable interest that you can do alone, right? Just something that you love doing by yourself, which will help you deepen your bond with yourself and make it easier to have solitude and have a sense of well-being when you're alone. Number nine, do a random act of kindness for yourself each day. A nice warm bath, a relaxing hour in the sun with sunscreen at the beach, even a delicious smoothie. You know, it can be food too. It can be healthy food. There are many kind things that we can do to treat ourselves each day. A walk, time with our loved ones. We just need to take the time and put the effort into doing them. Often, we put our time and effort into our relationships with other people, and we kind of forget about ourselves. And you got to put yourself first, because an empty vessel cannot serve. Right? What do they say when you go on a flight? The flight attendants say, you know, if the oxygen masks drop, parents, put them on yourself, not on your kids, because you are no good to anyone else if you're giving all your oxygen to someone else. You need to have your own oxygen so that you are able to be there for others. So important. Number 11, listen to your body. A true best friend treats you kindly, motivates you to be the best person you can be. But the sad truth is so many of us treat our bodies terribly. We neglect them, ignore them, abuse them, create a host of physical, emotional, psychological illnesses and pain. We berate our bodies. We hate our bodies. We're in war. We're in battle with our bodies. But you know what? Our bodies are us. Your body isn't some other entity. It's part of you, and you need to listen to it and honor it and take care of it. So if you're constantly tired, try to sleep more. I can't tell you how many people come in and they're like, yeah, I was so tired, and so I ate, you know, cake. Well, if you're tired, cake is not the answer to fatigue. If you're tired, you need to rest. So stop drinking that Red Bull. Don't eat cake or anything with sugar in it to wake up. Get some sleep. Rest. Take a nap. Just chill. If you have chronic pain, take care of it. Look into it. Figure out what is going on. Go to a doctor. And, you know, also, if there's nothing organic wrong, but you still feel always aches and pains, look into what might be hurting you emotionally. Often we convert our emotional pain to physical. So when we put the needs of our bodies above the perceived needs of other people in our lives, we show ourselves self-respect, as a best friend would. And last, number 12, learn to focus on the positive things about yourself rather than the negative. Sounds so simple. Focus on the positive. It's not so simple. But shifting your focus is possible. Shifting your focus requires you to reprogram the way you think. Reprogram your mind, especially if you have the tendency to criticize yourself, judge yourself, put yourself down each and every day. You might be thinking, I don't really treat myself that badly. But most of the time, you're unaware of that negative chatter that's constantly going on in your head, the negative self-talk. You know, and when you listen to it, you hear this automatic dialogue, which is, oh my God, I can't believe, you know, I did that, or I can't believe you did that again, or you're such a loser, or how could you have missed that, or how could you have made a mistake, or people are going to think bad things. It can be really pervasive, and you can get so used to it that you don't even realize you're doing it. So open up to the good things about yourself, who you are, what you do. Take some time out of every day. It's going to take some time. It's going to take some effort. I'm not going to lie to you. It's going to feel really awkward and weird. You're going to take some time every day to say nice things to yourself. Nice things like, I'm proud of myself for fill in the blank. I feel good about how I handled that situation. Even, you know, I like my hair today. Good hair day. I like my eyes. I like my smile. I like my attitude. And keep in mind the pronoun I when you talk to yourself. One of the most common things that I see in my practice and in my online program is people talking to themselves really harshly in second person. That means they refer to themselves as you. They'll say things to themselves. They'll be like, oh, you have no willpower. You're such a loser. I can't believe you did that. You're never going to lose weight. How could you have eaten that, right? So when you try saying things like, I'm such a loser. I'm never going to lose weight. I didn't do a very good job. Sometimes that's a little bit more difficult because I is really, you're more centered in your body. You is someone talking to you. Maybe it's the voice of someone who talked to you that way and you've internalized it. Maybe you developed that voice as a way to keep yourself in line, imagining that being mean to yourself was somehow going to make you do a better job. Not true. Actually, being mean to yourself does not incentivize you to do better. All that being mean does is make you feel bad about yourself. Okay, now I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about binge eating disorder. Many people think they have no self-control. They believe they lack willpower. They think they're lazy or they just love food too much. I hear that one a lot. I just love food too much. You know what? They're all wrong. Here are some facts about binge eating disorder. Binge eating disorder affects 3 times the number of people diagnosed with anorexia and bulimia combined. Binge eating disorder is the most common eating disorder there is. Binge eating disorder is more common than breast cancer, HIV, and schizophrenia. Boy, those are 3 things that you don't normally see lined up together. It's very common. So maybe your issues with food are not a lack of self-control. It doesn't mean you lack willpower. Maybe you have an eating disorder. Maybe you have binge eating disorder. And that means you have a treatable condition. Let me just emphasize that. Bold, underscore, highlight. Treatable, a treatable condition. And that means you can heal and change. Another fallacy that I hear a lot, even from people who know they have binge eating disorder, is they say, well, it's something I'm going to have to deal with my whole life. Yeah, I'm going to have to deal with it my whole life. No. That's the point. That's why I'm here. Oh, I'm getting carried away, and there's a caller. Hi, caller. You're on with Dr. Nina. Hello? Caller? Where'd you go? Okay, I think I might have gotten your call too late. If you are listening, please call me back. Okay, so I was saying that many people believe that they're going to have to struggle with eating issues their whole life. By the way, caller, if you, I think you're trying to call on the other line. If you can call the first number, 818-602-4929, I promise I'll pick up. I was just getting so carried away, I didn't even see that I had a call. But the reality is you don't have to struggle with this your whole life. You don't. There he is. I recognize the number. Hi, Nick. Hi, Nick. You're on with Dr. Nina.
Dr. Nina?
Hi, Nick.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. Sorry that I was getting all carried away, and then I saw, oh, there's a call, and I didn't catch it in time. I'm glad you called back.
Well, this is interesting. It's a few things together, and I just need your help. You know, I have a problem with a family member, a close family member, my son. And it's really been... I try to ignore it, but it's really eating at me. And to the point of all this time, that I stopped getting on the scale. It's been a long, long time since I, would get up in the morning and judge what my day is going to be or what I'm going to be by looking at the scale and living by that scale.
Yes. But, and by the way, can I just take a moment? Because that is just a huge, huge accomplishment. You need that. You need some applause. Okay, so you haven't gotten on the scale, whereas you used to get on the scale multiple times a day. It used to dictate your sense of self-worth and how you felt about yourself. And now?
Yes, I'm having a hard time hearing you. But what's happened to me, that's actually that I hit a point that I haven't had in a long time where I've known I gained weight. I don't have to get on a scale to tell me that I gained weight, and so on and so forth. And the thought of that, was very disturbing to me, in a way, dealing with weight your whole life. And now I'm dealing with this problem. I see myself gaining weight. It could be related to the two. And I'm just having a terrible time with it. And it's really put me in a bad state of mind.
Nick, you started off by saying you had a problem with your family member. By the way, can you hear me okay?
It's really blurry, but I'm really concentrating. Yes, it's difficult.
Oh,
so go ahead.
Okay. I'm sorry to hear that. I don't know what's going on. Could it be possible that this problem with the family member is so troubling and upsetting to you that it is easier to focus on your weight rather than focus on what's going on with your son?
Oh boy, I'm dealing with the weight because I'm stressing on the weight, which I haven't done in a long time, and I'm having it go on with my son. It's very possible that's how I'm dealing with it, because I'm eating I'm hooked on eating ice cream now. I crave ice cream.
You
like,
crave
I never
comfort.
Used to do that.
So remember, let's translate the craving. When you crave ice cream, that is an indication that you need comfort. And maybe this situation with your son is so upsetting to you that... that's your way of comforting yourself.
Yeah.
So
it's just so confusing to me. I mean, it's all these things coming back that I thought I didn't have before, and I don't know how to deal with it. I mean, with the food, obviously, but definitely, the communication, got a lot of things going on, but that's a main thing, and it's just difficult to try to, how do I control it? I mean, like, for example, my weight. How do I control it? I forgot how to diet, because I didn't ever have to think about it. I mean, it was always good, but I'm just, having a problem.
Okay.
It's just,
So, Nick, can I normalize this? First of all, when you are massively triggered, when things are going well, it might be easy to keep with the new status quo and not worry about your weight and not worry about ice cream. But when you feel extremely triggered, maybe in more than one part of your life, maybe there's something more than what's going on with your son, when you feel that triggered, sometimes, often, actually, we fall back into old ways of coping. And all this tells us is that you're really, really getting triggered. Something is sort of re-traumatizing you, I think. So it's like a wake-up call. If you find yourself going to those old behaviors, it's just a wake-up call to say, okay, you know what? This is something that needs my attention. If I'm turning to food, if I'm starting to worry about my weight, what's weighing on me? What's bothering me? Why do I need comfort? How else can I comfort myself? How else can I relate to myself?
Yeah. I have to tell you that I can't hear you speaking. It's getting worse and worse. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, yeah. I'm going to tell my engineer that there's an issue.
Yeah, it's completely blurred, the things you're saying to me. I'm very frustrated about it, but maybe can I call right back and see what happens?
Yes, call me back. All right.
Bye.
Bye. Oh, okay. So hopefully he'll call back. And so I just want to say that when you... Oh, here he is again. How about now? Is that any better?
No, I can't.
Okay.
I can't. You're just blurring out on it.
Okay.
I heard most of what I said. I'm really sorry, but I can't. It's a bad connection.
Okay.
Well,
my engineer
I'll
is...
I'll try back later or,
yeah.
or next week.
Yeah.
But,
call me back
later.
I
heard a lot what you said, and I just got to do it. It's a lot of work, that's all.
Well, could you hear me on the show? Were you listening to the show before you called?
What was that?
Could you hear me on the air before you called? Could you understand what I was saying?
On the air, is
okay.
No problem.
Then I am going to address your question on the air.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
Okay. All right. Sorry for the trouble, but I'm gonna answer it right now. Okay, so
okay.
Hang up and I'm going to answer.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Right.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye. Okay. So Nick, sorry for the technical issues. So basically, I was saying that when you have a period of time where things are going well and you feel like you're healed, you've healed your relationship to food and things feel good, and then suddenly something happens and you are back to your old ways, or you feel yourself on a slippery slope back to old ways. As Nick was saying, he was suddenly eating ice cream and feeling fat, worrying about his weight. So that tells us that he is being very, very triggered. Something is going on in his life. It sounds like there's a difficult situation with his son, who, you know, if you've listened to the show, he's called before and talked about this son, who, as I recall, is quite controlling and kind of mean, not a best friend to his dad. So it's easier to sometimes to focus on what you're eating or on what you weigh than to say, wow, I feel so hurt and disappointed by my son. I'm mad at my son. I don't like my son very much right now. It means that there is something bothering you, some trigger that needs your attention. And I'm also wondering, the other thing I was asking Nick was, I was wondering if you also had, if there was anything else going on in your life other than the situation with your son that might be causing you to kind of go back to these old patterns. And I also normalize that. It's not unusual to go back to those old patterns. It's not unusual to, for things to go well and then you find yourself a little bit regressed. But that regression is always for a reason. It always means something's going on. It always means that there's something that needs your attention. So my advice to you is don't give in to the temptation to focus on feeling fat, what you weigh, beat yourself up over ice cream. Don't do it. Instead, ask yourself, what's really bothering you? What's eating at you? You know, what's weighing on you? What's too much? Translate all of the, you know, fat, I weigh too much, I've gained weight. Translate that into emotional needs and conflicts, and that will help. So, you know, I'm as an example, you know, in the next, Nick, if you're, you know, the next time you find yourself wanting to get on the scale, don't say, what is it that I'm trying to measure? What is it I'm trying to avoid? What is it I'm trying to distract myself from? If you start thinking, oh, I've gained weight, what is it that you don't like about your life, not your weight? Translate the language of your thinking about your weight and your body to emotional, internal conflicts and questions. That should help. So I was talking about earlier about how there's a misconception that people think if they have food issues that they're going to have to struggle with them the rest of their life. And here's the thing, nobody has food issues. It may seem like food is the problem, but actually food is the solution to the problem. You have issues, conflicts, things going on in your life, problems. There are things that are eating at you, weighing on you. That is something that food is the solution to, not the problem. It may seem like the problem, but it's not. It's the solution to the problem. Kind of like Nick's solution to dealing with the sun issue was to eat ice cream and then focus on his weight. The problem is not ice cream. The problem is not what he weighs. The problem is his son and whatever is going on with their relationship. So because food is the solution, not the problem, once you change the way that you respond to problematic situations, once you change the way you relate to yourself, guess what? Everything changes. And even if you might have a little bit of a regression, like Nick is kind of having right now, it doesn't last long. It's more like a blip. It's more like, oh yeah, I'm doing that thing that I do when I'm trying to avoid feeling bad about someone in my life or situation, or when I'm doing that thing I do when I feel helpless. Let me remember my other ways of responding to myself. Let me be curious, not critical. Let me be a friend to myself. Let me validate, acknowledge, and reassure myself, not eat ice cream. So anyway, all of this, which is to say, there is hope. There is hope. If you feel hopeless over food, if you feel like you have no control, hey, something is happening within you that you're using food to cope. It's just a very bad coping strategy. But you can find other ways to cope. You can find other ways to be in relationship to yourself and food. And that's why it's treatable. It's healable. Is that even a word? Healable? It's healable. It is now. I say it with conviction. It's a word. Okay, so what are the symptoms of binge eating disorder? Here is another caller. I hope this works. Hi, caller. You're on with Dr. Nina. Can you hear me?
Larry, this is Larry. How are you?
Hi, Larry. Welcome. Can you hear me okay? Because I had a caller earlier who couldn't hear me.
I hear you okay, yeah.
Okay, good.
I heard Nick on the phone. I guess he couldn't hear you.
Yes.
But, I have the same situation as Nick. When I get triggered by something, and it doesn't take much, I sort of... I go off the rails easily, so to speak, at least in my mind, and I'm not able to function in the present time nearly as well. My thinking goes off, and just when I'm triggered by psychodynamic things, it's hard to get back on track. But I know you suggested on the show a way to do that, and it seems to work very well. Speaking of very, it works very well. Can you run that by us again? Because I know I can do a much better job of explaining that than I can.
I would be happy to, and I'm really glad to hear that my VERY acronym has been helpful to you. Even though it really should be AVRY, that doesn't work with the acronym. So it's VERY, validate, acknowledge. It really should be acknowledge and then validate. But okay, we could do them at the same time. Validate, acknowledge, and reassure yourself. So the next time you find yourself, you know, opening the pantry door or opening the fridge, you say, wait a minute, what am I feeling? What's going on with me? What is it? And then say, of course, I would feel that way. Anyone in the situation would feel this way. Or even if anyone wouldn't, I feel this way. And my feelings need my attention, not my condemnation. So that's acknowledging it. Acknowledge what you feel and then validate it. This is something that needs validation. It needs attention. I need to honor what it is that's going on with me right now. I need to stay curious, not critical. And then reassure yourself, I'm not always going to feel this way. This is temporary. I've gotten over difficult situations in the past. I'm going to get past this. I have strengths. I have abilities. I have capabilities. Right? You give yourself that kind of reassurance. And then, you know what? You feel better.
Yeah. Even if I found that even if I don't feel better immediately, or even if I don't feel better a minute after I remember and have the intention of using the very technique, the intention itself breaks the word I'll use is spell, which is sort of hocus pocus, but it breaks the pattern of reasoning that draws me to the garbage in a refrigerator, like a Star Trek tractor beam. It breaks that thinking, and it allows me to just stop, which reminds me of a book I read years ago, and I didn't need to read it. It was just called Stopping. And the main premise of the book was just stop. So I think that whole notion of stopping is, it's helped. I can't think of the right word, but it's helped by your very technique, and vice versa. It reminds me to stop and breathe, and it plays off well with each other. It's just a matter of maybe programming myself to remember to stop. And as you were talking, I've heard of neuro-linguistic programming and physical sensory-based kinesthetic anchors. Have you heard about that, or is there anything that may facilitate my remembering that, or
I think that's all fancy words for, you can learn new ways of doing things. But the most important thing is, don't say stop. Stop. Just stop that. That's not comforting. But saying, I can get past this. I can get past this. I can bear this bad feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Will help you stop. Say, this feels unbearable, but it is bearable. I can get past this. This will pass.
Mm-hmm. The feeling I get as you're describing that is sort of like all of the, I'll say, stuff, quote unquote, in my limbic system, way beneath my logical reasoning. And you always say it's not logical, it's psychological when I eat garbage to bury, feelings. That part of me needs something very simple. Instead of the words you just mentioned, which are perfect, maybe instead of stop, just breathe. Breathe instead of something that pejorative or whatever.
Yes, I think that's a very good choice. Stop seems dismissive and, okay, stop. Just it's not kind.
Yeah.
It is pejorative, but just breathe.
Breathe.
Yeah, breathe.
And then the words that you said so eloquently will follow, that I don't need this and I'm better than this and this is beneath me. I don't know. It'll come to me at that moment, but just the notion that this tool is available can break that cycle, because willpower, that's not the solution any more than the Beverly Hills High School reunion diet is the solution. That's just gas on a fire.
And I remember that is an actual book that you had mentioned. You have some interesting book recommendations, Larry from Burbank.
It helps when you work in a library, so there's a lot there.
And remember the tone, right? And just one thing, as you said, this is beneath me. Maybe maybe think of it as this is not beneath you, but this is something that you're trying to help yourself, and maybe there's another way. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's another way.
Yeah, I think if I were to say to a friend, this is beneath you, I can picture myself looking down at him or her and pointing a finger, this is beneath you, you know, suck it up. That's sort of where I naturally go, and that's not a good thing. But to use compassionate language, you always say that the words we use are so important, like stop versus breathe. So I work with words. I can, maybe it would even behoove me to sit down for 30 seconds and write out something that is compassionate and nurturing and dial into that, you know.
I think that's a great idea, words and the tone that we use them in. Even let's just take stop, right? You could be like, stop. Mm-hmm. But you could say, stop, right? It's a little different. So tone is so important, the tone that we use to with ourselves is just crucial.
Yeah. But nevertheless, I think breathe, that more nurturing tone will come with the breathe. Stop. I add an exclamation point to it automatically. But, you know, now that's kind of splitting hairs. But I did, as you were talking earlier, I came up with an even shorter version of very, because even when I do breathe and start to break that cycle, I have to go, what was that again? And for me, it's just VR, validate and reassure. And it came to me like it's this sort of imaginative to the point of absurdity, but it also stands for virtual reality. And I'm creating a new reality at that moment by
I like that.
Validating, yeah, and reassuring. So, you know, and it would be less expensive if I were to get a tattoo to remind myself. VR.
Well, I like VR too. Whatever works is good. You know, mm-hmm. Whatever kind of more gentle, kind, compassionate, understanding, responsive mode of relating to yourself is effective, is good. But but being harsh is never effective. Because then you just go to food to get away from your mean self.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's that is so true. I actually was triggered about 8:00, and I've been sitting here trying to work, but mostly pounding the keys and, you know, pounding my soul until I remembered to call in. And it, you know, the first thing I heard was you reassuring Nick with the same thing, and I thought, you know, I wouldn't kill myself to do that before I called. So here I am.
I'm glad you called, and I'm glad to hear you've been thinking about the kinds of things I've been talking about, and I like your take on very. So, mm-hmm. Again, practice makes progress. Whenever we mm-hmm. try something new, even if it's good for us, it always feels awkward and unfamiliar. But the more that we practice, the more familiar it becomes, and the more unfamiliar and clunky the old way becomes.
The power of habit. Yeah. I don't know how I am time-wise, but, I mean, I can share with you what triggered me.
Tell me.
Okay. I've spoken about my mom several times on the radio, and she's started to she stopped complaining with words, and that triggers me. I know that that is her way of dealing with her stuff in addition to eating garbage. So what she's done, and this sounds so petty from my standpoint for anyone else listening, but you know a little bit more about my background, having talked on the air before, she'll get up and she'll say, oh, you know, I don't know if she's like she's in severe pain. That thing, it's just the same thing, and you know, I just went upstairs just to get the hell away. But I went upstairs angry, so I don't know what to do with that. Or just imitate her, which would be gas on a fire as well.
So when she's like, when she's making those noises and sounds, like what do you hear? What's the subtitles to that?
It's, I'm going to complain as much as I goddamn want to, but I don't need to use words.
And is it just complaints, or is it kind of like poor me, or the world is so awful?
I think it's both. I mean, she's avoided getting help talking to a professional after my dad died, and my being the identified patient, if you want to briefly explain what that is to your listeners, I'm the one she dumps it on. And what she's saying is, my back is killing me, my leg is killing me, I'm so tired, I have atrial fib. But, you know, instead of hearing that, it's just this whiny kind of gasping bullshit.
So what I'm hearing, and by the way, for those of you who don't know what the identified patient is, it is a psychological term that basically means the scapegoat of the family. The person in the family who's the scapegoat, you know, that one, everything's always their fault, they're the problem, everything's about them, and it behooves the family to have a scapegoat, because then they don't have to look at themselves. That they're not the problem. No, that person over there, that's the problem. So what I'm hearing, Larry, is that you have this mother who wants you to mother her, you know, and mm-hmm. and she's a mother who, from what you've shared on the show, it doesn't sound like she did an adequate job of being a mom to you. So here you are in this kind of enraging situation in which you have to take care of a person who didn't do a good job, from your perspective, taking care of you.
And my method, unconsciously, the way I do it is more like my dad than my mom. If it were my mom, I would, you know, turn on the TV, put on Jack O'Lane in black and white, and eat Twinkies, and, you know, go get lost. But my dad is more, you know, more severe. I'll snap at her, which is wrong. Or I do what I do myself so well, just cut and run like I did this morning. So just realizing where she's coming from, honestly, that hasn't helped. Maybe I just need to walk away like I did this morning and do the VR, you know?
Yeah, and don't tell yourself not to feel it. Tell yourself that, of course, there's a reason you feel it. It's exasperating. It's enraging. It's, you want to shake her mm-hmm. for a reason. And honor that without battling it. Honor it without acting on it, right? You can be like, oh, she drives me crazy mm-hmm. for this reason. And express it. And then do the VR.
You know, and by expressing it and saying, this is how I feel now, it can supersede my brain from going back to 1966 then, which is a lot more powerful. So right now, September of 2018, I feel this way because she's toxic and I want to heal. And then I go into breathe and vary.
That sounds so
that's good. I like that, the whole sequence that you described.
Well, it sounds like you're the one who's describing it. You just took what I said and you put together a nice little package for yourself of, okay, this is what you do when you feel this way. And mm-hmm. that is a lot more effective than beating yourself up, eating and beating yourself up, or any form of beating yourself up.
Right. And I can do that every time I'm invited to have Cracker Jacks as well. And, you know the drill. And one thing that you helped me with at the beginning of the year is sort of a New Year's resolution, is to know that this person's not going to change. And that's, And my being a family therapist is not going to change. It's unconscious, and it's really deeply seated.
So
I'm okay with that.
And her invitation to join, to have you have her Cracker Jacks or whatever it is for you evidence that she doesn't listen to you and she doesn't care, but really it's her inability to understand that there's a different way, that you have your own struggle. Like, it's an inability to empathize, not some kind of, I don't know, hostile act. I mean, it might, mm-hmm. might be a little unconsciously hostile, but it may also come more, and I don't know. It could be hostile. It could just come from just an unwillingness to change the way she sees the world and experiences the world, mm-hmm. and that's her way of showing love. Have my Cracker Jacks.
Well, I mean, I think it's both. I think in the sense that it's deeply unconscious, it's me becoming her Dr. Phil, which she watches, you know, 10 hours a day. And her exasperated whining is her way of expressing the pain, she said. And at the same time, I look very much like my dad did. And if there's some anger at that's from that element as well. She used to ply him with food. And that was her way of having a minute amount of control with this domineering person.
And showing, yeah, so. Right, so control and love. So she's just redoing it. And when you realize mm-hmm. that, it might take a little bit of the charge out of the moment.
Oh, yeah, it eliminates it just about, you know, it's a complete shift, probably even neurologically. So I'm gonna put this on my Word doc. I'm going to delete the latest filthy limerick and put this on my Word doc. Okay, I'm kidding. Print it out and put it where I can see it, really, this whole process.
Okay. Well, I love it. And please keep me posted and let me know how it goes. And remember, okay. Practice makes progress.
Exactly. And I appreciate that. I'm, like I say, I really am going to print this out right now. So thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you. Talk to you soon.
All right. Okay. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye. Oh. Well, if you've been listening to the show for a while, you've heard Larry call in and talk about his mom and go from, you know, just kind of rage and anger and exasperation and hurt to, you know, I guess today a more measured perspective on her, just that she's a flawed human like we all are, and he's coming to terms with her flaws. And when we do that, our expectations of people can also change, which is better for us. Because people who are triggering us are usually just totally oblivious. They're just living their lives, doing their thing. They have no idea that they are creating havoc in their wake. So anyway, all right, just really quickly, while we still have a couple minutes, I want to give you the symptoms of binge eating disorder. We're going to talk more next week about this and how to overcome it, which is actually the whole point of the show. So symptoms of binge eating disorder: regularly eating more food than most people would in a single sitting, while feeling out of control about what they're eating. Having binge eating episodes at least once a week for at least 3 months or longer. And at least three of these symptoms: eating really fast or way past the point of feeling full. Experiencing negative feelings of shame, guilt, or remorse about what you've been eating. Eating a lot when you're not hungry at all, and eating alone or binging alone because you're embarrassed about how much you're eating. So those are the symptoms of binge eating disorder. And if that surprises you, it's something to think about, because again, binge eating disorder is a treatable condition. It's a psychological condition. Why can't I speak today? It is a psychological condition that is treatable. It doesn't have to do with food. It has to do with your relationship to yourself. Again, more people struggle with binge eating disorder than with any other eating disorder. And by the way, just because someone is overweight does not mean he or she binges or overeats. Very important. There's all kinds of assumptions going on that if someone is heavier, that must mean they're out of control with food. Not true. And by the way, people can be binge eaters and be normal weight. So you can't tell if someone has a binge eating disorder problem by just by looking at them. So it's not about learning more discipline. It's not about self-control. It's about understanding how you've come to use food as a way to cope. You are not lazy. You do not lack willpower. It is not about self-control. By the way, people with eating disorders tend to be perfectionists, and they work nonstop, some of them, which makes them more susceptible to binging and overeating, because sometimes you just give yourself a break from work by eating. And there's also a lot of shame involved in binge eating disorder. So more about that next week. Thank you so much for joining me today on the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I am so glad to spend this hour with you. If you'd like more food for thought, check out my website. It is there's a new URL, Dr. Nina Inc., DrNinaInc, Dr. Nina Inc., and follow me on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Dr. Nina Inc. See you next week.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.